Welcome back, everybody, to Indigenous Oracle. I am thrilled to have Tani back with me this week. We actually completed an episode already on graph theory. Here we are laying a little bit more of a foundation, how graph theory relates to psychedelics and just how it might be a useful modality in your therapy model if you're going to therapy and might want to explore a new tool. So I think I'm going to start here by welcoming Tani and giving her a moment of quiet so she can introduce herself. And so I'll just stop myself here and over to you, Tani.
Hey, Janice, thank you so much for having me back. It's such a joy to be able to connect again and dive into all of these beautiful topics. So yeah, I'm very excited to be here. For those of you who don't know me, I go by Tani, but my full name is Brittany Sertonsky. I am a trauma-focused psychedelic integration therapist on Vancouver Island, but I work across Canada. I do some work internationally as well, and I weave in ceremony, energy medicine, expressive arts, sound medicine, and holistic wellness coaching. And I'm weaving those pieces in with more workshop style and group types of formats, as well as retreats locally and internationally. And then the one big piece that I guess is quite relevant here is I'm also going back in school, completing my PhD in graph studies. So the focus in transpersonal psychology and archetypal astrology. So that brings in a lot of what we're going to cover here today, which I'm really excited to go into a bit more.
Well, thank you, Tani. I just wanted to point out that we actually were having these very dynamic conversations for the last couple of hours. It's actually been almost 2 hours that Tani and I have been chatting. I'm just buzzing from the conversation. I always learn something from Tani. And then you go and mention the astrology piece. I definitely hope you come back and talk to us more about the astrology piece and how that works into graph theory, because I find that very interesting. And I think it would make a great episode. Indigenous people all over the world, Indigenous ways of knowing, have known about the impact of the environment on a baby when it's in the womb. We've known that the baby can hear us, feel us. Yeah, there's nothing new about this information. Maybe what's new is how Stanislav Grof is starting to try to interpret what maybe some of those experiences in womb might translate to in our life. So we're going to explore that a little bit. But this is, I just want to say that, this aligns with the teaching. It's almost like a rediscovery for other people, but something that we've always known the impact of the environment on the developing fetus. So help us maybe transition from Dr. Trina's episode talking about psychedelics. So she covered a lot of basics and just maybe some not as well known facts about psychedelics that I thought were very interesting. And if maybe we could just start there and transition to more of a foundation in the Grof theory, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this might be a good time as well to weave in a little, like just a gentle little disclaimer around some of the things that we're talking about here in this episode, as well as kind of across many of these episodes where there's this continuity of this theme. And the disclaimer is around much of what we're talking about with psychedelics and with holotropic or Grof breath work is, you know, these are tools to induce non-ordinary states to help us move towards wholeness, towards healing. And they're, you know, I really want to really anchor in that these are big tools that should be taken seriously and with reverence, and you know, just hopping into them without really having a clear intention or having a proper container or good set and setting without proper oversight, depending on how deep we're going. It can lead to challenging experiences. And so we really want to, you know, offer this information and education and encourage you to really move at a pace that is responsible and from more of this harm reduction sort of approach. If you are going to be navigating into these spaces, seeking out people who understand this territory, who are well trained in it, and being in spaces where you feel safe to do this work. Anything I missed there, Janice?
No, I think that's really important, because actually someone I know I'm quite close to went to a retreat and they used this breathing, and it was way more than she had prepared for, and went pretty much screaming out of the room. And was not prepared to have such a big experience, and did not feel like the people in the room were able to help her contain that experience at all, or, you know, navigate it safely. So yeah, it's really important to, you know, be cautious and intentional when thinking about these complex tools. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. I've seen this happen even in cannabis ceremony, when, you know, cannabis is so used so commonly now in our area, and and when used in a certain context, I've seen people, very similar to what you just described, having really, really difficult experiences with something that we think is really, more mundane, but really has quite a lot of power. So yeah, there's that. And then of course, even with the breath, right? We're not accessing it, a tool that's separate from the self. It's actually within us. And there's a lot of power in that. So being able to really know what we're getting into and having the proper support and integration support when we're moving through these.
Yeah, I'm glad that we took the time to lay that foundation, because it is kind of trying to hold both of those things, but why not better safe than sorry, I think for sure applies to these states.
Yeah, because these states can open up a fair bit. They can really help us tap into spiritual awakening, spiritual emergence, and then in multiple other things. But again, that's a whole nother podcast episode as well. Yeah, to kind of go back to Trina, kind of picking up where Trina left off, she was talking a bit about the definition of what's the definition of psychedelic. And so the definition of it is mind manifesting. And so to jump off of that a little bit, there's, I believe in the previous podcast, there was a bit of this discussion around the, you know, what's being manifested through the mind, the amplification of the psyche, this sort of thing. And I'll add in, Chris Bache, who, writes, a couple really lovely books on LSD. And he explains, specifically with LSD, but you can also sort of apply this to other psychedelic compounds as well, is he describes the LSD experience as psychic surgery. And so it's the different approach. So we think about, you know, surgery, like surgery that we go to the doctor or et cetera. And they do surgery on the body in this way, but this is an intervention. There's a way in which to work with the material that is in the psyche, and it is through being able to connect with these psychedelics and these non-ordinary states, these holotropic states of consciousness, that allow us to do that. So we can go in and we can make adjustments. We can clear things out, right? Kind of clearing up some of the clutter. And so there's many different ways that we can do that. But again, it comes back to having an understanding of how these medicines are working and being able to utilize them as the tools that they are, right? Like, for example, if I have a hammer But I don't know how to use the hammer. It's not going to be a very great tool for me. Or if I think I'm going to use it for trying to eat a meal, it's going to be difficult when I don't actually know the proper use for that tool. So this is where the education and working with practitioners who understand these can be really helpful. And so if we go into a little bit more of this, thinking about the psychic surgery, going back, tying in another piece that Trina was talking about as well around LSD therapy. So LSD therapy, there were quite a number of people who were doing it back in the 50s and 60s. And Stan Grof was one of those individuals who did quite a lot of this work. And when LSD became rescheduled in the USA, he had to essentially go back to the drawing board and figure out what he was going to do in his work, because now the substance that he was using to treat patients with was no longer accessible. And so him with his wife at the time, with his late wife, Christina Grof, they developed this process of holotropic breathwork. And, you know, he's got over 35,000 breathwork sessions that they've done to date, that have shown, and sort of allowed these models that have emerged from his experience with this. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit as well.
That's a good transition from some of the things that Trina talked about, because we're going from Stanislav Grof using LSD to investigate, you know, the human psyche and look at, yeah, the healing and how our womb experience and our birthing delivery experience might impact our life. And now we're talking about him having to adapt and come up with this breathwork process to enter those same states to continue his research of, like you say, these modules that these theories, practices that he has developed. So that'll probably take us to perinatal matrices is the technical term. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about what that is, and maybe even cover how we're moving away from the impact of trauma in womb to more of how, like, we adapted, how we adapt as fetuses in the womb, depending on what's happening in our environment. Maybe we could go there next. Is that okay?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and it's an interesting sort of fairly complex framework. So I want to try to simplify it so it becomes more accessible. And so that's my hope here is, so Stan, through all of these breathwork sessions, through all these LSD sessions, the content that was coming through from that experience, he developed what he calls the perinatal birth matrices. And so there are those four stages. And so in each of those stages, we will all move through each of those four stages as part of the birthing process that we all go through as we come into this world. And of course, to varying degrees, depending on all the different variables in our own individual experiences. And so the first matrix that he talks about is, he calls the primordial union with mother. So this is where, so typically in this idealized situation, we would have baby who's in the womb. It's this beautiful, loving, supportive bath that they're in, and they're being fed, they're being cared for, they don't have any worries. So it's this loving, playful, symbiotic sort of unity with mother, with their primary attachment figure. And where this can get challenged sometimes is when we don't have those idealized scenarios or circumstances where, for example, when we're in the womb, you know, when a baby is in the womb and the mother, may not be feeling safe. Perhaps they're in an abusive relationship. There's an abusive partner in the picture. Perhaps there is food insecurity. Perhaps there is, a good example would be like a pregnant woman who would be in a war, in a country where that is, in the midst of war, and the mother is trying to leave and find safety. It's a consequence of these circumstances where there is this lack of security, this lack of safety. But then because there's this symbiotic unity with mother, the baby picks up on these pieces as well.
Talking about some, a significant external factor, which I think in some ways our typical society might not want to recognize what the impact that actually would be on a developing fetus if the mother was under this constant stress or worry or, you know, getting ready to flee through, you know, a dangerous exit strategy out of the country. Yeah, I think we, you know, in normal society, we might underplay that, but I believe that there could or would be, or there could be a significant impact on the fetus, and to recognize that it's going to manifest differently for everybody. But we did talk about how that might manifest in somebody later in life if they did have the first kind of three months or so experience in utero there. So did you just want to talk about that, where how that might show up later in life?
Yeah. And it is. And I also want to speak to, like, there's all of these variables, and sometimes we can get stuck in thinking that it's my fault that my child went through this difficult experience. And, you know, we can get stuck in some of those pieces. And I want to speak into, like, none of us, like, we all move through these BPM, these perinatal matrices, and there's a beauty in a sense of the unique experience that we each move through, because it actually creates, it helps form who we are and the path that we move on in the life that we have, in a sense. And so there are, like, a lot of these pieces that can happen, in the womb to, you know, in the first matrix, as well as the other matrices as well, that will impact us later in life. So with this one, for example, with the first one, that may show up as having a fear, perhaps having a more fearful constitution around how they see the world. Perhaps there is this difficulty with feeling secure or feeling rooted in where they are in life. Maybe they have difficulty with feeling safe, just generally, like, it's difficult to feel safe and trust that my environment is going to be safe. And then, of course, the consequences of if I'm in an environment where I feel unsafe, what ends up happening there?
Adaption, the word adaption, like, we're constantly adapting to our environment, adapting to our world. And this is the human experience. It's not about blaming or finding fault. It's more just about investigating this human experience, maybe a little bit deeper than we're used to. So how might this present itself later in life for a person who was in the womb when their mom was experiencing this level of stress because her environment was unsafe? Can we make any guesses about that, do you think?
Yeah, it's, well, and of course, like you also mentioned earlier as well, like, every experience is going to be so unique to that individual, and the way that the consequence manifests is going to be so unique to each individual. So, you know, I can't say that if somebody experiences this exact thing that it's going to turn out in this exact way, because there's so many variables at play. But some of the thematic ways we could theoretically see some of this play out might be in somebody who is trying to navigate in relationship, maybe there's some difficulty with attachment security because there's this inherent, there's like deep core rooted feeling of insecurity just in life or in how they experience the world, which then might play out in a challenging way in the relationships, in their ability to stay grounded or rooted in one place, in a home, for example. It might manifest as sort of the scarcity, like a scarcity mindset around, you know, I'm not feeling safe in the environments in that I navigate in life. And there's a fearfulness around trusting in the world, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so now we're kind of going back to how, you know, utilizing this tool of breath work could help us maybe access this. Maybe mom didn't tell us that you started off in this war-torn state because she didn't want to put that energy on you. Maybe you're not even conscious that was your first kind of 3 months of being in the womb, and you start running into problems in your life. You're been going to therapy for a long time, but you just can't put your finger on this feeling of unsafety or scarcity or whatever it is you're going through. And so enter this tool, this module of breath work to help get us into those states where maybe we're closing down a bit of that gating, as Trina called it, and being able to revisit that.
The breath work or psychedelics, they work in similar ways. And so in the breath work, we can go into these different areas of the psyche. So for example, like we only typically have access to, you know, maybe around 5% of our experience is conscious. And so that other 95% is unconscious material that is going to play out in our lives continuously, even without us knowing or understanding. It's still going to operate through. And when we go into these non-ordinary states, it gives us the ability to, it's like walking across the bridge, that we can go into this material and access it and work with it, shift it, resolve it. There's many ways to kind of go into more detail with that, but really simply, we can work with the material and bring it into consciousness, and it shifts our relationship with it, or it adjusts like the energetic charge of the content that is in the psyche. And when that happens, that's where we see major shifts. Where, for example, if I have this deeply rooted fearfulness, or right at this fear of life, that scary things happen. If that goes all the way back, and then of course we also have Stan Grof calls them COEX systems, so systems of condensed experience. So kind of picture like a ball, and that ball is, you know, perhaps starts when we have an unsafe situation, when we're in that first matrix. And then that ball, every time that there is another situation where there's something fearful or unsafe, then it's like there's more of that energetic content then attracts to that ball, and the ball gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So this theme gets bigger and bigger. And so then it's going to have more charge. And it's all going to be operating in this unconscious place. But when we work with the breath work, we can go into these places, and adjust that and sort of remove the charge from it, I know that sometimes this is a little hard to grasp in a sense.
Can I just
explain, yeah, please,
a little bit from my own experience?
Yeah.
So I get to look at it through different eyes, and I maybe get to feel some energy around it, like have a purge through tears or crying or throwing up or something to move some of that charge, like you say, to dissipate some of that energy. And then from my experience, it usually would end with an opportunity to now kind of connect with something more positive in that story, in that instance, in that situation. Maybe connect to, you know, my mother's protective love. Like maybe there was a lot of stress, but then there was some time where she was just, you know, really bonding with me and really picturing what life was going to be like. Maybe, for example, right? Once we were in safety and having these hopes and dreams. And so from my experience, there's always a chance to kind of reconcile it with some better experience, some better news, some better feelings. Is that true in your experience too, Tani?
Yes. Beautifully said, because what it is we're accessing the content. We're working with it, and we're working with it somatically as well through the breath and through the body. Body work is a part of this process as well. And so we're dispelling, right? We're discharging that energy, and we're moving into a reparative process where it's like, what did I not get in that moment that I actually need? Or, you know, can I call on the archetype of the mother to be there so I can feel secure in that? So we're repairing it in real time, but we can't do that unless we have access to it. And so that's what makes these really beautiful medicines and tools that we can access this material. Because, for example, like in talk therapy, a lot of talk therapy we don't know how to access this. So we're only accessing that 5% of conscious material. So we're missing the mark quite a lot. Like there's so much more to be able to access, but if we don't have the tools to get there, and if we don't have the knowledge and the framework to understand that there's more, you know, we're going to be going to talk therapy and going there, right? Those times where we go to talk therapy for years and years and years, and we're working on the same thing. But it's because most of the material is in this unconscious space where we don't have access to it. So we're just talking in circles, thinking that we're trying to do the thing because it's like, oh, I'm going to therapy, I should be fixing this. But we're actually missing the mark.
No, I like how you say that, and you're reinstating some of the things that reinforcing and saying in different ways some of the things that Medi covers about the coec and these loops that we get into, you know, through our life, that sometimes, and maybe mostly, I guess it's a theory, start in these first kind of four stages of conceived and to being delivered, right? That this is, there's way more importance in this than maybe a lot of psychology theories want to kind of give weight to. And I've heard it described as patterns or loops, like this energy, like I don't know, the way that I explained it was, or I think it's Joe Dispenza it's Greg Braden talks about his theory is that these things, if we do get in one of these energetic loops where we're attracting the same feeling emotion over and over again, that happens in like 4-year cycles, or for some people 7-year cycles. And I found I could go through my life and I could pattern the exact number of, you know, the exact year of when the next kind of feeling of terror was going to present itself for me. And I could see a pattern in that cycle. So there's lots of different ways to look at how we are in these, we can be in these patterns and these loops. And this is another way to kind of try to unwind it and stop it at its core and have a different experience.
Well said. Well said.
So yeah, I like that there's a lot of ways to look at this. And I'm glad that Medi is going to be, you know, kind of expressing it in his way. I think he talks about the layers of an onion, which I've heard lots when it comes to therapy and healing, but to kind of relate it to this Groff theory is just kind of gives it a whole nother level of interest for me. I think it's important to not download too much at a at a time, to bite off these pieces a little bit at a time, because it really is complex territory we're talking about, and there's so much to it. And yeah, I want to thank you again for articulating this foundational pieces so well, so we can carry on with this Groff a theory series. And I do hope that you come back and do another, at least another one or two episodes with me, so we can go a little bit deeper into at least the astrology part, and maybe answer some more questions if we find out there's any pieces that we might have been missing once we've gone through these next couple of episodes. How does that sound?
That sounds great to me. Yeah, it's been a pleasure being able to weave these pieces and trying to share some of this knowledge that I think there is a lot of really interesting bridging of the things that are already known, or the ancient wisdom and traditions that that know these things, that have been, you know, often the knowledge is lost, or, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of all of us as Westerners that have come over, and we have lost our connection, and for me, this sort of feels like a re-remembering in a sense, where it gives me some of the framework that I'm realizing does bridge with more of the ancient traditions, and at the same time is interestingly, like, the language use is a bit different because it comes from a more clinical model. So it's been an interesting dive, and continues to be an interesting dive. And, you know, how do we bridge things that we know, or that we intuit, or that has been carried down through our DNA, or maybe that we have lost, and how to bridge the newness, or the things that have been lost, the books that have been burned that we're now coming back into awareness with.
And yeah, and that reminds me of, you know, what I said to you earlier before we started recording about why this is so exciting to me, because it rings true for me. It lines up with some of the teachings that were so generously shared with me. And I feel like there's just another opportunity to go a little bit deeper and hit the mark a little bit closer when we're trying to address some of these issues in our life and move forward into abundance and joy, and kind of clear some of this stuff out of the way. I have my own vision of sitting in a circle with, you know, my family and colleagues, and experiencing some of these benefits that we've just really hearing a lot about, in recent training, but now in the media, and to have the benefit of experiencing some of this stuff in our lives, and experiencing it together. And yeah, that's my hope. And that's what kind of keeps motivating me to push forward and stay in these spaces, learning more. And because maybe one day I'll be able to support people with these healing modalities and the altered states of consciousness. So thank you again for helping me along the way with this. And I look forward to having you on again.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Janice. And thank you for everything that you're doing and all of these contributions that are going to be adding to the community and adding to our collective knowledge in this work.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's definitely, I think we both share a passion for making this more accessible and more accessible as far as learning about it, and also in being able to experience it. So I think we share that knowledge. So thank you. Next week, we will be hearing from Mehdi and him talking about Groff theory. So stay tuned, everyone.